So what time do you get up on Christmas morning? How does it work at your house? Do you have a little one that's up at 4 o'clock in the morning banging on everyone's door saying that it's already way past time to be up to open presents? Or maybe you got a college student, and since normally during the week they sleep in till 11:30 in their dorm room in the Green Quad, and you know, they come home for Christmas. It's not Christmas morning for college students, it's now Christmas afternoon. That's the schedule. That's when everybody wakes up. Or maybe there's no kids and Christmas is whenever you say it is, right? It starts whenever you decide it starts. Or maybe Christmas morning doesn't happen at all. There's a story I was reading about a lady who grew up, and in the early 1940s, her and her family got a new house in a new neighborhood not long before Christmas. And she woke up one morning and she was awoken by the clatter, the clip-clop, the jingle bells. There was something outside. So she sprang to the window to see what was the matter with all this clatter. And she looked out, and in the snow, she could see sled tracks right out in front of her house. She just knew, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that Santa had been there that night. So she ran downstairs, but there were no presents. Her mom came in, and she said, what's wrong, honey? She said, Mom, I heard the jingle bells, I heard the clip-clop, and I heard the clatter, but there's no presents. I just know Santa came. And her mom said, sweetie, Christmas morning isn't for another week. You're a little early. But what did she hear? Well, this was the early 1940s, and still in her neighborhood, her mother said what you heard was the horse-drawn wagon of the milkman coming to make his deliveries. Isn't that amazing? That poor little girl, her Christmas spirit just fell, and it couldn't giddy up. That little jingle bell Christmas pun, that one slays right there. What if, though, there was a way for Christmas morning to happen every morning? What if there really was a way that every single day you could be awakened to the spirit of comfort and joy in such a way that that comfort and that joy never fades and is never taken away? We continue our holiday series called Where's Christmas, where we are trying to do everything that we can to make sure that we get the deepest meaning of the holiday, that we really catch, and really we would say that our hearts are captured by a meaning that goes way beyond just one day in December. The title of our sermon today is called Finding Christmas, and we're going to be looking in the Bible at Matthew chapter 2, beginning in verse 9, which reads like this. After hearing the king, they went on their way, and behold, the star which they had seen in the east went on ahead of them. Some wise men traveled hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles away from where they live to go to Jerusalem to find the one who is born the King of the Jews. They went to find Jesus. And King Herod heard about the wise men, and so he summoned them to come to him, and he charged them to go and find the king and then report back to him. Go find this newborn king, and then come back and tell me exactly where he is and where you found him. The wise men had been following a star. They referred to it as his star, meaning the unique star that God commissioned for the birth of Jesus. And they had been following this star, and after talking with King Herod, the star continued to miraculously guide them. There seems to be this sense that in one way the star showed up at some point in time where they lived, and it appeared to them, it alerted them, it directed them to go and start looking for Jesus. And now it seems that it has maybe reappeared again, now that they are closer and is guiding them again. Or in another sense, Charles Spurgeon said, maybe it's like what the Hebrew slaves experienced when they were rescued, that this star was a cloud by day and a fire by night in some way. We don't really know. What we do know is it is recorded that this star, his star, got the men to where they needed to go and is now directing them to Bethlehem. And where did it guide them in Bethlehem? Listen to the next part of verse 9. Until it came to a stop over the place where the child was to be found. The star supernaturally hovered right over the place, the house, where Jesus was. Now that is some true, perfect, divine GPS right there. They went right to the spot. And how did they respond when they got there? Verse 10. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. Why did they have joy? Well, they had joy because they had a sense of expectation and anticipation. And those became a reality. So it was no longer expectation and anticipation. Now in this moment, it was exhilaration. It was animation. They were over the top with joy. Last Sunday, our kids' choir sang a song, and part of the words of the song said this: when you find what you've been looking for, you celebrate the good, good news. These wise men found what they were looking for, and they were celebrating over the top with joy. Somebody once said this joy was quadrupled. It kind of breaks down like this: they rejoiced with joy, they rejoiced with great joy, and then they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. There's a lot of joy here. Exceedingly with great joy. Do you have that kind of exceeding joy this Christmas? Is that the joy that you're finding this year? Or is it hard to find joy? Is there something keeping you from finding this kind of joy? Like a cup of really sour eggnog, are you feeling ignored this Christmas with joy? Is there something happening in your life? Is there something happening at home, at work, at school? Is there something happening with the economy? Something happening with politics? Something happening with college football or pro football? Is there something happening that seems to be so overwhelming to you that in your mind you're thinking, there's no way joy is going to find me? The psalmist had a day like that. He was in a season like that about 3,048 years ago, and he wrote it like this, Psalm 43, verse 5. Why are you in despair, my soul? And why are you restless within me? Hope in God. The soul of the psalmist was overwhelmed. It was restless with stress, with anxiety, with frustration, with despair. Ever felt any of those things? Are you feeling some of those things today? And what does he say to himself? He says, hey self, hope in God. Hope in God. There's a moment in J.R.R. Tolkien's The Return of the King in the Lord of the Rings series, his book series, where one of the characters, Sam, is feeling overwhelmed like that, discouraged, the sense of despair. Sam had been on a huge quest to basically save the world, and he was feeling overwhelmed, and there was a moment where doom seemed imminent, where everything around him seemed absolutely impossible. Ever felt that way? And in Dali, Sam just started talking to himself, because this is what Tolkien said in the book. To Sam's surprise, he seemed tired but lighter, and his head seemed clear again. No more debates disturbed his mind. He knew all the arguments of despair and would not listen to them. His will was set, and only death would break it. Listen to a few of those words again. Sam knew all the arguments of despair and would not listen to them. I don't know about you. I know all the arguments of despair, and I listen to them a lot. We know the arguments of despair. We know what it means to be restless. We know what it means to be overwhelmed. This is, at least statistically, the most stressed out Americans have ever been. When you track statistics, you go back 25, 30 years ago, you don't see the proliferation of stress medicine and stress tactics and everything else that is found today. In fact, statistics seem to be showing that nothing really showed up until about 2012. And all of a sudden in 2012, middle school girls got stressed out of their minds. And then it went to the boys, and then it went to all of us. We are a stressed out world. We know all the arguments of despair. We know them, and we listen to them. But it is amazing that there's nothing new under the sun. And no matter what the statistics say, about 3,048 years ago, it may not have been a middle school girl. It was a middle school psalmist. And he was overwhelmed and restless. And he said, "Why are you so restless? Why is there so much despair? Hope in God. Wait for God." He knew all the arguments of despair, but he said, "I'm not going to listen to those. I'm going to try to listen to God." Now, I'll just say, this is very pie in the sky. It's easy for me to stand in the pulpit and say it, but it is very, very, very true that our hope needs to be in God, and all the arguments of despair will keep coming our way. Sam said, "I know those arguments. I'm just not going to listen to them." The wise men, they weren't even believers. They weren't followers of God. And yet they went looking for Jesus. This journey was expensive. This journey was dangerous. And there were probably plenty of times that there was something that created despair in their life. But they just kept hoping. They kept walking. They kept traveling. They kept looking. They didn't stop. And the irony is, these wise men, in a sense, were hoping in a God they didn't even know, a God they didn't even believe in. They were looking for joy in a God that was not their God. Do you know God? Is God your God? Are things right between you and God because you have believed once and you are believing, you are continuing to believe in God's Son, Jesus Christ? If not, then we would plead with you, turn to Jesus today. Turn to Jesus right now. Repent of your sin. Be set free from the curse of sin. And if things are right between you and God, then we would plead with you, turn to Jesus right now. Turn to Jesus again and remember what you have in him. Remember the power, the authority, the grace that is found in Jesus, the exceedingly great joy that is yours in your salvation. Because that exceedingly great joy is what Christmas is all about. The Apostle Paul put it this way to the Galatians, Galatians 4:4. "But when the fullness of the time came, God sent his son, born of a woman." At just the right moment in history, when it felt like God had abandoned the world, when it felt like God said, "You know what? I'm just going to let these arrogant, pompous, crooked politicians run things." At a time when it looked like God was saying, "I'm going to let the greedy dictators, the self-absorbed dictators, I'm going to let them run things." Any of that sound familiar? At just the moment when it seemed like God had abandoned the world to men, he invaded the world with the light of hope, the light that cannot and will not fade. at just the right time in history, at just the right moment. No accident, Jesus was born. If you were here a few weeks ago, you may have heard my friend Brent when he was preaching. He said, I always tell my wife I felt like I was born at the wrong time. I have said that so many times. But what time are you going to pick? You know, I used to say I would pick Victorian time. But you know, when I think about that, there's something about the bathroom situation. Yeah, that's not when I want to be born, you know. I'm all about some indoor plumbing. I think that's fine. I think it's a good thing. That's grace. At just the right time, Jesus was born. At just the right time, Jesus was crucified. At just the right time, Jesus was resurrected. And at just the right time, Jesus will return. Are you ready for his return? What's the song we sing this time of year? It's the most wonderful time of the year. That's great. Super. But if you were to take the one thing that you treasure more than anything else, is it Christmas morning or is it being with Jesus? When you consider the greatest treasure, the thing you long for the most, the most wonderful thing of any year and any moment, is your most wonderful thing to be with Jesus. The wise men were rejoicing exceedingly with great joy because their journey was over. They found what they were looking for. Have you found what you were looking for? Have you found Jesus? What happened next? And after they came to the house, verse 11, they saw the child with his mother Mary. Now just a quick, important, historical, and practical note here. When the wise men found Jesus, he wasn't the baby in the manger that the shepherds saw. It's all right that your nativity scene has everybody there. It's fine. Nobody's going to lose their mind. But they weren't there, okay? When they found Jesus, he was probably 6 months old, maybe all the way up to 2 years old. And so they find Jesus, and after this long, expensive, dangerous journey, what's the first thing they do? What's the first thing they do when they finally found what they were looking for? Verse 11, and they fell down and worshiped him. How have you responded to Jesus? Or have you responded to Jesus? Someone said when you look here in Matthew 2, you see a picture of three different ways to respond to Jesus. You have Herod. Herod's response to Jesus was hateful and hostile. He was very self-absorbed, self-focused, self-centered. He liked having control over his life, and he was jealous and paranoid and angry that there could be someone who could have power over his life, not just for eternity, but even today. Are you responding to Jesus like Herod with hostility because you don't want your life bothered with his reign? What about the chief priest and the scribes? They were indifferent to Jesus. That's how they responded. They were all about the Messiah. Oh yeah, man, we're all about the coming Messiah. Man, he's going to be the greatest president we've ever had. He's going to run things, put things back the way they need. Can't wait for the Messiah. In fact, they were so for the Messiah, they loved getting together at church within the framework of the church and enjoying the whole hope and the idea of the Messiah together. But they had absolutely no intentions of leaving the sanctuary, taking up their cross, and following the Messiah. Are you responding to Jesus the way the chief priests and the scribes did, the way the church folks did? What about the wise men? The wise men, they were not believers. They were not followers of God. But they dropped everything at just a glimpse that there was a king who could really save them, really satisfy the deepest part of who they are. Are you responding to Jesus like the wise men? Charles Spurgeon said this, "Those who look for Jesus will see him, and those who truly see him will worship him." Those who look for Jesus, they'll see him. And those who truly see him, they will worship him. See, this is kind of a funny scene if you think about it. See, this wasn't a palace they showed up at. Jesus wasn't, you know, a child dressed in royal princely robes. This is just some house in Bethlehem. I mean, you know, kind of temporary housing almost for a carpenter and his family. But that didn't throw them off. What throws you off at Christmas? Are you thrown off if you don't get the right present or if you don't give the right present? Are you thrown off if the food's not just right? Are you thrown off if the decorations aren't just right? What throws you off at Christmas? These guys were not thrown off that it was not Norman Rockwell Christmas. They weren't thrown off. They walked in and they saw Jesus, and their expectations were met in him. What are your expectations with God? What are your expectations with his son, Jesus? Do you expect God to kind of run things according to the way that you would run things? I mean, have you been to the religion buffet? And you kind of tailor-made, put your plate together of who God is. And as long as God works with your buffet plate of religion, you're fine. You'll go along with that. But if he starts painting outside of that plate, now you're done. You will only follow when he matches up what you expect. I walked down earlier and told Tammy, gosh, I love what you said in that opening prayer. Jesus came to us, but not everyone comes to him. That's not a lot of people's buffet of God. They don't like the notion that everybody doesn't get to go to heaven. What's your expectations of God? What is it that you're expecting him to do? Those wise men, they did not travel hundreds and hundreds of miles with demands of God. They traveled with desires for God. Where's your heart? Is it demanding or is it desiring? Because they went with a desire to find the one who would satisfy the deepest part of who they were. They found what they were looking for. And what did they do? They fell down and worshiped. They didn't shake hands with the child Jesus. They didn't fist bump him. They didn't hug him. They didn't kiss him on the forehead. They fell down. They knew as soon as they laid eyes on Jesus, they knew he was holy, holy, holy. He was other, other, other. They knew in an instant that he was King. At the end of his book called Mere Christianity, C.S. Lewis says this, "Look for yourself and you will find in the long run only hatred, loneliness, despair, rage, ruin, and decay. But look for Christ and you will find him, and with him everything else thrown in." Have you looked for Christ? Have you considered the truth about Christ? Have you found Christ? If not, look right now. Find him right now. Because if you find him, you find not just everything your soul longs for, but everything else is thrown in. The story is told of the great meteor shower that happened not long before Christmas in 1833. And there was a boy named Sandy, and he was asleep during the night when the shower started to happen, and there was terror everywhere. And his mom came running in, "Sandy, Sandy, wake up. The day of judgment is here." It's interesting because just like the wise men, Sandy had already found what he was looking for. He was just a boy, but he had already found what he was looking for. He had already found the king. He had already fallen down and worshiped. He was already believing in Jesus. So when his mom comes in and says, "Sandy, Sandy, come on, wake up. The day of judgment is here." As the story goes, Sandy leaped out of bed and said, "Glory to God, I'm ready." If that's what happens Christmas morning, are you ready? Are you ready for that Christmas? If so, like the wise men, like Sandy, like millions of men and women and boys and girls over the last 2,000 years, if you have looked for Christ, if you have found Christ in the deepest and most exceedingly joyful way, then, dear friend, Christmas morning is every day. Every day we can say, "Glory to God, I'm ready." So, if that is true of your heart, then we have every reason to come and worship. Come and worship. Come and worship Christ, the newborn King.